Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the interim results for Personal Group. I'm just going to take you through a very brief introduction. Then I'll hand over to Sarah Mace, our CFO, who'll take you through the half-year results. And then Sarah will hand back to me and I will give you an update on our operational and strategic progress. And there will be time for questions at the end. So without much further ado, let me just get started. So this is a bit of a recap. For those of you who followed us for some time, you'll be aware that we report in three main segments. So our insurance business, our employee paid insurances. We also have a SaaS segment. Within the SaaS segment is the revenues that we get from our Happy Benefits platform, the platform that we offer through Sage to the SME market, and finally Inecto, our pay and reward consultancy. Let's Connect is a salary sacrifice technology business, and they offer technology to employees to pay for it through their payroll, and they save national insurance on those costs. So that's the overall business. Again, for those of you who perhaps haven't followed us for so long, we are primarily an employee benefits organization, and we supply an employee platform, and employers can use that to offer their staff discounts. They might include information about their pension, they might include information about other benefits that the company offers, such as cycle to work or childcare discounts and that type of thing. As part of the offer, historically, we've also always offered employee paid insurance. The insurances are very simple. They're a death benefit, which pays out relatively small amounts on death for a relatively small weekly or monthly premium, depending on payroll cycle. And we go in to see employees in their place of work face to face to offer the insurance. More recently, the business has moved into selling the platform to employers without the insurance. And we've particularly done that with the SME market through our channel partners of Sage, and also to larger organisations who don't feel the need for their employees to be able to buy our insurance. So that's where we are for right now. I thought before I handed over to Sarah, it might be useful and sort of slightly whet your appetite for the rest of the presentation, just to touch on what we've done for this year. So the half year obviously ended in June, and there are a few things that have developed since then. Obviously, if you recall, throw your minds back to that point, we were still in lockdown. And so there are a few things that started to happen right at the end of the period, which have developed over the summer, and I thought might be interesting for you to be aware of. So I'm just going to quickly go through these headlines, and then we'll come on to them in more detail later in the presentation. So it feels like we're back to winning ways. Across the group, we've won 40 new clients in the first half, and you can see there's a good range of public and private sector organisation and different size organisations, different sectors, and so on. We're also really pleased with the progress that we've made on our partnership with Sage. So we sell a platform called Sage Employee Benefits through Sage to small and medium companies. And we started that in earnest last autumn with free trials. Those organisations converted to paid at the start of the year, and we've continued developing that progress over the period since then. So I'll give you a better update on Sage later on. We've also not been idle over the summer. We've developed additional functionality on our benefits platform so that we can sell it to organisations who have more complex benefit needs. And we've just recently launched our very first clients with the Happy Flex platform, which was the University of York. We announced on Tuesday that we had done a contract with the Retail Trust. So the Retail Trust is a charity which is supported by the main retailers for the benefit of their workers. It provides training, support, and actually even some residential housing for older workers. The patron is Her Majesty the Queen, and at the moment their technology could do with a bit of support, so we've offered them the Happy app and website to support their users. So potentially there's over 500,000 retail workers that will be becoming Happy users. Turning to insurance, we've only been back out face-to-face since the end of June, so bit of an update through the summer. Obviously, it's still early days. We've only been out for 10 or 12 weeks, but we are seeing very strong policyholder conversion rates, which is very positive. And we were concerned that retention might start to drop off, remembering that our policyholders in the main pay through payroll, that we were concerned that with the end of furlough, we might see one or two people losing jobs and so on, one or two companies ending employment. But in fact, the end of furlough has been so gradual that that hasn't happened. So our retention rates year on year remain very strong, with over 4 out of 5 policyholders remaining with us. And with that, I'm going to hand over to Sarah to take us through the financials. So over to you, Sarah.
Thanks, Deborah. So in terms of the overall financial results, with COVID restrictions continuing for most of the first half, I think we've got a fairly similar set of results for the first half of the year to that which we spoke about back in March for the full year for 2020. So we start with revenue. Revenue was up year on year at 34.2 million against 30.4 last year. You can see there that the main driver of the increase was the transactional spend and commission, which is the spend through the Happy platform where people are buying reloadable cards and e-vouchers at a discount for their shopping and trips to the cinema and such like. But notwithstanding that, I think revenue held up pretty well overall. And we continue to see the benefits of having 3 good quality income streams across insurance with its high retention rates, SaaS with its annually recurring revenue, and Let's Connect as well, where they have a strong levels of repeat business. So we ended the first year with EBITDA of just over 4 million against the 5 million last year. And we'll come on and look at each of the segments in a bit more detail in a second. But I think broadly, the key drivers of the results were they obviously reflected the anticipated reduction in contribution from the insurance business that we were expecting, because we were unable to go out and write our face-to-face insurance sales for the majority of 2020 and then coming into 2021 as well. But as last year, the fact that we didn't have our field sales team out on the road meant we did in the short term benefit from some acquisition cost savings in that area as well. We continue to see strong retention rates, as Deborah just mentioned, and also stable claims ratios across the insurance business. But probably the key difference between these results and the March results is we did see growth in the non-insurance elements of the business around SaaS and Let's Connect. So we ended the period with profit before tax of 3.2 million against the 4.2 million we posted last year, and basic earnings per share of 8.4 pence. You can see there, obviously, we've maintained our strong balance sheet. So we have cash and deposits of just over 22 million. No debt. So we hold around half of that cash to cover our solvency capital requirement for the insurance business. But we obviously remain well placed to invest for growth. And you'll see that with the results, we announced our interim dividend for the first half of 5.3 pence. We just move briefly to the segmental analysis. So I'm not going to stay on the slide particularly long, but this is just really to highlight. You can see there the decline in the insurance contribution at EBITDA level that we were expecting. But that has been offset by growth in the other segments. So if we just move on to insurance, we'll look at that in a bit more detail. In terms of top line, so revenue premium income reduced year on year, so as we're expecting, because we weren't able to go and write new business last year. You can see in the first half of this year, we wrote 0.6 million annualised premium, in comparison to the 2.1 million we saw last year. And you can also see there that we had a mix. During lockdown, we introduced a couple of other channels to market, virtual visits and telesales. And you can see there that in the first half, we had a fairly even mix of new business through those 3 routes. But notwithstanding, face-to-face didn't really start in earnest until the very end of the period, so probably the last couple of weeks of June. So that route does remain our most productive way to go out and see and write new policyholders. In terms of retention of existing policyholders, I've already mentioned retention rates were very strong. Combination of obviously people continuing to see value in the products, particularly in the pandemic, but also we were originally anticipating maybe a little bit of an impact from the end of the furlough scheme, but whilst the government's extended that continually throughout the period, that seems to have diluted any impact that we might have seen from that. So overall, at the end of June, our policy numbers had reduced to 236,000, but now we're back out selling face-to-face. They've now reached that inflection point, and in July and August, and then we'll continue to see into September and the rest of this year and going into next year, those policy numbers have started to increase again. Just briefly on claims, claims ratios remained relatively stable, 22.5% for the first half. As last year, the mix, I guess, of the claims ratios is slightly different to those we've seen historically. So we did see an increase in death benefit claims and a reduction in hospital plan claims. And we expect that mix to start to revert back to more historic levels as we go into the second half and into 2022, as the NHS start to address the sort of waiting lists that they've obviously built up over the time they've been dealing with COVID. So just finally, overall, looking at the EBITDA contribution, it is down. You can see that reduction to underwriting profits driven by the top line and reduction to premiums. but obviously mitigated in part by the insurance acquisition cost savings that we made in the first half by not having the field sales team out on the road. So if we just move to SaaS, so broken out the transactional spend and commission from the other SaaS elements there. And whilst you can see that that transactional spend doesn't have any impact directly on the bottom line contribution, it does obviously have an indirect benefit in validating, you know, the value of the employee benefits platform, both to the employers who are providing it for their employees and to those employers themselves who are obviously benefiting from the discounts and other items that they can get through the platform. In terms of the SaaS revenue outside of that, so that's the three elements that Deborah spoke about at the beginning. So the Happy Platform subscriptions themselves, the SME version that we go to market through via Sage, and the next, so the Pay and Reward Consultancy, where we see consultancy income and some SaaS income as well from some of their digital products. Just starting with Sage, so we've started to see the top line increase through the period as people converted from free trials that Sage gave them up front onto paying. That has been more significant at the end of the first half, and Deborah will come on to speak about that in a second. Inexo had a very strong first half. Both their consultancy income was very strong, and they continue to sell to digital products, which are pay benchmarking and job evaluation type products. And their pipeline has come back very strongly. They're back at the levels that they were seeing pre-COVID. And then just finally on the Happy Platform subscriptions themselves, they remain relatively stable during the period. But we have got a few new clients, and the University of York and Happy Flex that Deborah just mentioned will go live in the second half of the year. And we're expecting to see growth well, in all three of those areas, really, as we go into the second half and into 2022. And then finally, just a quick update on Let's Connect. So Let's Connect, you can see top line up fairly significantly year on year. That was helped in part by the deferral of some schemes that originally were deferred from 2020, that ran in the early part of 2021, and also continued strong sales from Royal Mail Group, which is one of Let's Connect's main clients. They run an always-on scheme. And employee penetration rates of the schemes that did run, we also saw go up year on year, which was encouraging. Let's Connect is a second half dominated business, so, and particularly Q4, just before the Christmas period. So we don't normally expect any significant level of contribution at the half year, but we will see the contribution come through in the second half. We do continue to have pressures on margin and the availability of goods, TVs and the like, you know, nationally, just not subject to Let's Connect. So we are conscious we're doing everything we can to try and mitigate any impact of that at the end of the year by stocking up on items that we can in advance and just trying to keep that margin as high as we possibly can. But I think overall, once that margin pressure subsides, hopefully as we go into next year, Let's Connect should be able to bounce back and go back to the kind of levels of contribution that we'd seen previously.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Sarah. Okay, so strategic and operational review. So let me just give you a quick update on our market. So I think the clients that we mainly serve have come out of COVID, which was really hard for them because a lot of the clients, you'll recall, are care home workers, food manufacturer, transport and distribution clients. It's been a really tough period for them. They've been out on the front line when other staff have been working from home. But what we do recognise is that the impact of staff shortages that we're now starting to see, and a reduction in people available to drive lorries or drive buses or work on a factory food production line, is really acting as an accelerator across the whole of our market. So employers are obviously concerned about rising wage levels, and offering a benefits platform and putting some investment into that is a more cost-effective way of making employees feel that they're being looked after and adding something extra rather than just simply adding to the hourly wage costs. So that's across the market, I think we're seeing that. But just turning to ourselves for a moment, obviously in offices, the majority of companies are now running a hybrid model where employees are coming to work in the office for some of the week and they're also working from home for part of the time. Now this creates its own problems in that the sense of perhaps community, communication becomes more difficult. And I'll just remind you that we're very experienced in dealing with organisations who have remote workers or those who don't sit behind a desk all day. So you know, if you're looking after somebody in a care home, you're not necessarily sitting behind a laptop. And therefore, we do have a lot of experience in providing employee benefits to remote workers and those who don't use normal office equipment. So therefore, I think we have an edge there. And certainly the use of the app has been really intensively used to communicate with employees, whether they're at home, in the office or out and about. And then I think, to be fair, COVID has been a bit of a kick up the backside for us, definitely. I think we got very used to, in COVID, making quick decisions and speeding up our decision-making process, and also perhaps trialing things and testing things to see whether they might work. And I'd like to really make sure that we continue that and develop our execution as we come out of this period. But I think it's also fair to say for employers, it's also acted as something of a shock to the system. And definitely what we are seeing is that where we've had employers talking about providing wellbeing services for staff for a long time, that intention has now moved into impact. And we are seeing companies willing to put some money behind new benefit platforms and also making sure that they're offering to their staff the services that staff want. Just turning for a moment to our insurance market. So clearly insurance, as Sarah's talked about, is a main part of the business. In the UK generally, insurance sales are up. The Compare the Market survey that I referenced there suggests that 18% more policies are being sold in health and life since the pandemic. So a real jump there. And to be fair, we're also seeing that in these early trends, face-to-face conversions up, policyholder sales are up. And we're also seeing an increase in the death benefit. So we sell policies to hospital plan, convalescence and death benefit. And death benefit is now approaching a third of the plans that we're selling in comparison with a historic average of more like 4 out of 5 of the plans that we're selling. So we do recognise that there's a move there, but it's not necessarily substitutional because we are perhaps seeing a larger share of the wallet in terms of people spending more on insurance. I'll come on to that more in a moment. In terms of digitalisation, I think it's probably fair to say that a couple of years ago, we would have talked about our end users as being slow and low adopters of technology. But I think that's changed for everyone, hasn't it? Through the pandemic, we're all seeing that we're using technology much more. And so we're responding to both our policyholders, our end user employees, and also our clients where they're at, which is that they want to see things in a more digital world, whether that's claims, whether that's reaching out and being able to provide services for remote workers. We're seeing that all across the piece and have really spent quite some time developing and implementing new technology. So let me go on to start and talk, do a bit more of a deep dive on insurance. So Sarah's already given you the numbers, but I think just looking ahead a little bit and bearing in mind that this is very early data, it really covers the period from the end of June onwards, so relatively short period, 10 or 12 weeks. But what we're seeing is an uptick in the conversion rates when we're going out and selling to people face to face, and also policy sales per person are up 20% as people are buying more insurance, whether that's including a death benefit plan or whether they're spending more. All of those things are seeing an increase in the amount of sales per person. You might recall that probably at the end of the first half last year, I think we talked about the fact that we had 400,000 to 450,000 employees in our client base. Since then, we've added a further 200,000. So since the end of June last year, we've added a further 200,000 employees to that client base. Royal Mail and the Kingfisher Group, so made up of B&Q and Screwfix, plus some other additional wins, have meant that we've really got a very substantial book of new business to go after. And we've been really mobilising that over the last few weeks as we've gone back out and working with new clients and existing clients to arrange site visits and have our employees, our field sales team, go on face-to-face. So as a result of that, we've really increased capacity in the field sales team. So the numbers had dropped a little bit, as you can imagine, through furlough, and we've also had some internal transfers where people have taken a different job through the lockdown period and stayed with us, but moved into a different area of the business. So we're refilling that field sales population with an aim to come out towards the end of this year running at a fairly high number and then continuing to increase into next year. So some quite, additions to the sales team. And that's because the opportunity is so strong. You know, we have clients asking us to go in. The unprotected message is really resonating very strongly. And unusually for us, the clients are really booked now for the rest of the year and into 22. So it's a very strong opportunity for insurance. And if I just show you the policyholder pipeline, you can see that if we consider that all of the employees that are accessible to us, so we go onto site, so that means that if somebody's off on long-term sick or they're off on maternity leave or they on occasion don't have good enough English for us to be confident that they can understand, all of those employees excluded become our accessible employee population. Of those, we present to over half, and some of the people that we present to say that they don't want to have an insurance presentation, which is obviously their choice. So we present on average to about 45% of the accessible population. And then of those, historically, 52% have then taken a policy. But what we're currently seeing is that has risen to 58%. And if I look at who is still a policyholder from that moment that they choose a policy in their workplace through to 12 months later, I see that actually 50% of them are still remaining as policyholders. And then once we go past the 1 year period, more than 4 out of 5 policyholders actually stay with us. So you can see when that's spread out like that, there are some obvious opportunities for marginal gains in the number of people who we see and receive a presentation. I'm fairly relaxed about the conversion rates. I think that feels about comfortable. I wouldn't want it to go too high. But the major areas that we can perhaps improve are that retention after a year, sorry, during the first year, and then moving into 12 months plus. So there's some real opportunities, I think, to increase the number of policyholders that we have with the existing opportunities that are in front of us. And obviously, as I've already mentioned, there's quite a significant addition of new clients that we need to go and service. So that's where we are with insurance. I think, as Sarah said, we've reached the inflection point. We're on our way back up, and fingers crossed, no more lockdowns. We should be very positive, I think, over the next year or so on how that's working. So let's turn to SaaS for a moment. So one of the things that since I became chief exec, I wanted to do was to focus as well as on insurance, also thinking about how we drive revenue through the SaaS platform. And I touched on this last time. But what we really want to see is make sure that we're maximising every opportunity that we can to drive improvements of the revenue and margin through our SaaS platform. So Happy is the platform that we put into employers, and we have a range of different organisations that use our platform. Some take insurance, some don't. But we're obviously quite keen to develop the relationship so that the employer is also paying for the use of the platform. And that requires us to provide some more functionality for them. So I thought it might be interesting for you to have a look at an example of a client who's just launched the new Happy Flex product. They have a more complex benefits offering, I think it's fair to say, than our average current client. And you can see that the way that you can use the Happy Flex product and the app makes it very simple to use and very easy to enrol for your choice of benefits. So I'm going to ask for the video to be played now, and this will give you some idea of the new platform.
Introducing Happy Flex, your unique benefits platform, bringing together all your flexible employee benefits into one place. Let's show you some new functionality that makes the enrolment process for benefits so much easier. Let's say you wish to select Nursery Extra, which helps you save money on fees by paying through the Salary Sacrifice Scheme. Enter the monthly amount required and continue. You'll instantly see the monthly amount deductible from your salary before you choose to proceed. If you're happy with that, then continue. If not, simply go back and change the amount. When ready, continue to the employee agreement and tick the box to confirm you agree with these, then submit. Your enrolment is complete. The financial section will give you access to rental deposit loans, salary-linked loans and savings, and workplace ISAs. Your health benefits not only look after you, but your family too. Each of the benefits has a varying level of cover, where you can choose who you wish to include from yourself and partner, or yourself and family. Within transport, you will find your cycle to work benefit, bus season tickets and train season tickets, all of which could be deducted monthly from your salary to spread the cost. The My Benefits tile is a new feature where you can manage existing or new benefit selections. For employees who have rolling benefits, you can find details of these in the My Benefits section. Any new requests will go into My Requests. You also now have visibility to the live status of your requests, from approved, pending, or rejected. You can also make amends to your benefits in this section, or cancel if required. If you're unsure of the benefit you want to select, you can also navigate via the categories.
Now, hopefully that's enabled you to see some of the more complex functionality that we've put into the platform. And what I should also draw your attention to is that the value, so that the fee that we charge per employee is some 5 or 6 times higher than for the standard Happy. So it really does have the potential to take the business forward in a very different way, perhaps, than we've done traditionally. So that's a bit about Happy. Let me move on now to talk about Sage. So for those of you who were with us last time, we talked about the fact that we had really started to get Sage moving in the sense of doing free trials for their customers on the Sage Employee Benefits, as it's called, app, which is a specific app aimed at small and medium enterprises. So we worked with Sage over the autumn last year into the winter to run some free trials. And those free trials started paying in January, February, March. And we halted the free trial process because we wanted to see whether it was going to work or not. And it did work. So I think I talked to you about the fact that in March, we were running at about 1 million annualized recurring revenue, which was really positive. We then started those free trials again. So we had companies going on to a 3-month period without paying, and they started to pay at the end of June. So as Sarah was saying, there's very little of this falling into the first half because the majority of the organisations that have now started paying through July, August and on into September and going forward to the end of the year. So we're now in a regular cycle where Sage hand us some warm leads. We then convert those warm leads into companies that are registered on the platform. We upload their employees and then we manage a process through their free trial where we encourage them to trial the different features. And then at the end of the free trial, they start to pay. And that process is now embedded. We've also taken over that conversion from the warm leads from Sage now completely. And we renegotiated the revenue split as a result of that. So we've renegotiated that slightly in our favour. So I think the news on Sage is really positive. We always knew it was a very large market for us to go after. And we're really pleased with how it's working now. It's time to sort of let it really start happening and really accelerate it. Michael Office is the Sage Vice President of Product Marketing and Development for the UK and Ireland. And he was keen to come and talk to our investors until I pointed out to him that it was pretty much a week of full-time work. So he's very kindly recorded a video for us, which gives you an introduction as to how Sage view the product and how they see it as parts of the future. So we're now going to see a video from Michael talking about the product.
I'm Michael from Sage. I'm Vice President for Product Marketing and Commercial for our UK and Ireland business. My role is around understanding the needs of customers, deciding what we're going to build and what problems we're going to solve for them, and then taking those things to market. So we chose Personal Group a number of years ago because of three key reasons. Number one, they had one of the best employee benefits propositions that was in the market. Number two, they had experience of serving the types of businesses that we wanted to take Sage Employee Benefits to. And three, that we very quickly built a shared ambition for what we wanted to do with not only Sage Employee Benefits, but how we wanted to work together. So Sage Employee Benefits is an integral part of Sage's strategy going forward. We see our payroll offering as being the Sage employee experience, where we're helping people not only get payroll right and take care of all of that tax and law stuff and getting it right every time and all that compliance, but also how do you manage and get the most out of your workforce, which obviously includes well-being, benefits, non-monetary reward, all of the things that Sage Employee Benefits and the proposition can deliver. Now, if I look back at the relationship that we've had with Personal Group, we had a really slow start to Sage Employee Benefits. We made a lot of mistakes, learned a lot of lessons. And in the last 12 months, we've really landed on what I call the magic formula. We seem to have the right relationship, the right journey. We're starting to understand the right promos and how we convert them to paying. And we're just starting, I think, to see a real acceleration into adding more and more new customers driven by increasing active usage of the platform, which hopefully should help us accelerate further growth. Our future plans for Sage Employee Benefits is really simple. We've really only just started to scratch the surface of the fantastic opportunity that we have with Sage Employee Benefits in the UK market. So Sage pays more than 10 million employees using our payroll solutions. We access a further 5 million employees with some of our other accounting and other software that we take to market. And if we look at how many employees are currently signed up with Sage Employee Benefits, that represents less than a 2% penetration rate. So we have 98% of the market left to go after. And as we're learning how to take this to market, the right promos, the right approach, the right content to lead with, I'm very confident that not only have we got a massive opportunity in terms of adding the value of Sage Employee Benefits to many more of those 10 million plus people, we've also got a brilliant commercial opportunity, which I think we're starting to see momentum building for how we go after that. So it's a massive part of our Sage strategy going forward. It's an integral part of our Sage employee experience proposition, and we look forward to many more successful years of hyper growth with the Personal Group team.
I think that's a good video from Michael. It gives a real sense, I think, of where they see the Sage employee benefits fitting into their offer, and also some information about the accessible market and the opportunity really that's there for us. I have to be honest, he talks about hypergrowth at the end, and it makes Sarah wince every time, because finance directors don't like talking about things like that. But there is a massive opportunity there, and we are starting to get a bit clearer, I think, about how we can deliver against the opportunity and really make it work for both of us. So that's really positive news. So let's just move on to the last part of the SaaS, which is Inecto. So Inecto, you recall, had a really difficult year in 2020. Their main audience and client base is HR directors, who were really busy, obviously, dealing with all of the fallout from COVID. However, since January, they have really come back very strongly. So on the Inecto digital side, so their digital platforms consist of some pay benchmarking platform, a job evaluation platform, and a pay review process that they can run for clients. And those have been really strong in terms of 92% retention through the period, but also another set of new sales, so 30 new platforms sold to date, more in the pipeline, more coming through all the time. And they look like they will hit their targets, numbers, and sales for the year on Inecto Digital, which is very good news. Turning to the consultancy business, again, that was challenged last year, but again, since the turn of the year, it feels like HR directors are back working in that space, in the reward benefits and pay space. And so we're really seeing a very active new client wins, and also projects from clients. So you can see we've won 17 new clients, 45 new projects, some of which obviously from the existing client base, and a very strong pipeline with over £1 million worth of opportunity in it. Obviously, they won't convert everything, but they're very strong at delivering on sales. So we're very excited about that. And then finally, just to finish off a bit on Let's Connect, I think Sarah said it all really. We've got 9 new clients signed. You know, it's a great business. It's a great structure. It's just frustrating that this year and last year, they have been unfortunately impacted by the changes going on in the world because of COVID, you know, chip shortages, transport issues. And we're very hopeful that we will get some decent supply this year. We do contract directly with the wholesalers. We're not going through a retailer. But you know, the last year was difficult and frustrating for them. But it's very sound and very scalable, and we look forward to things starting to return to normal into 2022 and beyond. So just let feature the sort of final things really from me before we go into questions. So I think when I joined the business a couple of years ago, I set out some very clear goals around how we were going to deliver in different market sectors above and beyond our core industrial market with insurance. And I think we're starting to see some very tangible progress against that, some momentum growing in terms of winning new work, working with new clients, and also widening our product range. There are strong tailwinds, I think, growing, pushing across the whole employee benefits market. So that's not just us, but generally, I think there's a real need from employers for the services that we provide. Insurance is obviously a key part of the business that we've been missing for over a year. And it's great to see the guys back out, back busy, and certainly the numbers up as we've seen. Sage Employee Benefits is a future part of the business, and it's something that we've now got really working for us and working for Sage. So we're really happy about how that's going and look forward to some future development there. And then finally, Happy, a flexible platform now, including flexible benefits, completely developed and delivered to our first client who went live a couple of weeks ago. So we've had a very busy, interesting half year, and we're really looking forward to next year and beyond. So thank you very much for watching the presentation, and I suspect we've got some questions now, so I'll wait for the questions to come in.
We've got a question here. It's great to see a female-led management team. Can I ask about the composition of your board of directors?
So the board of directors is equal numbers of men and women, and actually that's not quite true because Liam joined in May, so I think we've got one more man than women, and we have a male chairman. And for those of you that are also interested in, diversity, Andy Lothian, who's a non-exec director of the board and has been for a number of years, is black. And I tend to think that can be a bit of a tick box exercise. So I also look in terms of the board for diversity of mind and challenge as well. And we have a very wide variety of people's experience on the board. New chairman who joined us as a non-exec director in January and joined as chairman after Mark Winlow rotated off because he'd done his years. And Martin, who is an ex chief exec of HomeServe, he brings a very different approach. You know, he's got very different ideas, new things. He's quite challenging to me and the rest of the senior leadership team. So I think the board is diverse, both in terms of the, you know, the tick box stuff around, yes, we have women and people of different backgrounds, but equally, I think it's a very diverse in its thinking and challenges to the senior leadership team.
Tremendous, thank you. And do you get involved in client culture, internal comms and workforce engagement consulting as part of your offer?
No, not specifically. So we're not a communications consultancy. So what we do is we provide the channel, if you like, but we're not providing the content. So what Inecto does is sometimes they will run communications for specific reward projects. So for example, if they've put in a new job evaluation project or they've restructured pay, they may well lead the communication content side. But generally speaking, we're not content providers in that sense. We are the enablers of companies to be able to deliver their own channels and their own content to their staff.
Thank you. There are many insurance companies in the UK. What's your competitive advantage against other insurance companies?
So we tend to work in a very different way to other insurance companies. So we, first of all, I think our audience is different. So the audience that we serve tend to be people that don't earn very much money. They often work in roles where they don't get the benefits that you or I might take for granted. So things like sick pay or death in service. And often they're quite unsophisticated from a financial services point of view. So they're not always very comfortable in approaching financial services. The amounts of insurance that we sell. So for example, our typical death policy would be a premium that would pay out between £10,000 and £20,000 a year, in the event of somebody's death, which is very small compared to what you might need to take out to cover a mortgage. And the other key thing is that we go into businesses face-to-face, which is quite old-fashioned, isn't it? It's quite analogue in this sort of world, really, to sit down with people and talk to them about insurance. But the policies that we offer are very simple. There's no medical underwriting. The premium comes out of your payroll. You can cancel it because the premium actually renews on your payroll cycle. So if you work for Royal Mail and you're paid weekly, every week it renews. So it's not an annual policy that you're paying weekly. It is genuinely a very short-term policy. But also the premium never rises. So if you joined us back in 2000, the premium that you pay is still the same that you took out then. Agreed, the outcome hasn't changed either. So you won't be receiving any more in death benefit or hospital plan. But the point is you can budget for that because you know exactly what you're paying and exactly what you will get out of it if you need it. So I think in summary, there aren't really many people in our space. I think we are successful because we offer something that's very simple to an audience that we understand very well. And those people are very comfortable buying the policies because for them, they're low risk and they're not hugely expensive. So I don't think we're in competition from the main players that you may see. In addition, I think our face-to-face sales force who can go in, talk to people about the benefits that they receive through their employer, which they get through their Happy app, is also something that other benefits companies don't have. So the combination of insurance, the face-to-face team and the benefits really is unique, I think, in the market.
And are there any other benefits platforms?
Yes, there are loads of other benefits platforms. So I think in terms of other benefits platforms, you have the very sophisticated benefits platforms that would be run for, you know, Shell or large multinational global businesses. So they would have a collective benefit platform that runs in all the different countries that they work in, through to sophisticated offerings that often come out of the insurance company. So people like Aon will have a benefits platform that they would offer to their employees. But I think where we fit very, very strongly is the smaller end of the market. So SME through Sage and then UK businesses of over about 1,000 employees, right up to somebody like Royal Mail of 150,000 employees. We fit into that space of UK businesses in that size and category. So I think we've got a very clear space that we work in, and there are competitors in that space. But when you start to segment the market, you can see there are very different tools for different audiences.
What's your policy on shareholder dividends, given the reduced payments so far this year?
Oh, I think that's a nice one for our CFO.
Yep, no, I'll take that one. So you may or may have not seen, but the back end of last year, we actually changed our dividend policy and payment profile. Historically, as a business, we'd always paid 4 quarterly dividends, sort of in advance of the results. And at the back end of last year, we made the decision to move it to a more traditional twice yearly payment after the interims and the full year results. As part of that announcement, we did sort of confirm that, because obviously as a stock generally, we've paid out high levels of high payout ratios in terms of dividends in comparison to quite a lot of other companies. So we did confirm that we'd be maintaining those levels at the kind of levels that we'd seen for the last few years. So I think obviously the dividend is slightly reduced this time, in line with our reduced profit contribution, but I think we will continue to maintain a high payout ratio as we move forward.
Thank you. And that's the end of questions. Do you have any closing remarks, Deborah?
I don't think so, apart from the fact that I think my sense would be that the business feels like we've really turned the corner. Obviously, COVID has had different effects on different businesses, and for us, losing our sales, face-to-face sales team, and they weren't able to work and go and see people, not just because of the fact they couldn't go out and see people, but just even virtually in telesales, it was very challenging because our client businesses were going through such difficult times with people being ill and self-isolating and so on. But it does feel as though we've turned the corner and we've used that time wisely, I think, to really get ahead. So that as restrictions ended, we're ready to go out face-to-face with insurance. We've developed a flexible platform, and we've really worked on our relationship with Sage to the point where we're now developing there as well. So I feel very comfortable that we're in a good place going forward. Obviously, the EBIT numbers are down on historically where they were, but I think we've come out of this very strongly, and we're looking forward to the rest of this year and into 22 and 23.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.